This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com and your host. Joining me to discuss Villa's latest endeavours in the sweet FA Cup, as well as a look back at Wolves and keeping abreast of the latest Villa news, Mr. Chris Bird and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello.
I promised you that 2023 was going to be such a great year for Villa, but maybe 2024 will deliver the goods.
It lasted a day. We're asking. It lasted a day.
shall we just go straight to Emery out and save ourselves 2 years, or maybe 1 year of suffering?
November 2023.
Get it over and done with.
God.
You're not allowed to criticise Emery at the moment. I noticed somebody replied to one of my tweets about this Stevenage debacle and said, Emery in, Purslow out, question mark? It's like people desperately trying to find a scapegoat for this. You know, where can we find one? Well, there's loads of them, actually. But anyway, coming up in the show, we will get into this debacle. We'll also look at the context of Wolves, because we didn't really get into that too much in something for the weekend. There'll be the 3 points, media Muppets, before catching up with all the various bits and pieces of Villa news that have been happening over the last week or so. Right, how are you guys?
I'm terrific, mate.
How did you digest those final 2 or 3 minutes? I laughed on the second goal, I've got to admit.
I mean, when they equalised, I did say, don't worry, we've still got time to lose this, and I was proven right.
The thing is, you would argue that our team was actually, with five subs on, and there were five for the first...
Better than the team that started it.
Yeah, it's better than the team that started, and that's when it all kind of fell apart. But we'll get into this. We'll try to breeze through the first part of the show, because we're obviously chomping at the bit to get stuck in on this one. All right, it's time for some news to get things started. Shall we go for the Brazilian? It's Bolsonaro doing a bit of a Trump, isn't he? Storming Brazilian Congress, Supreme Court, and the President's Palace. His supporters. I didn't think what happened in America would turn out to be some kind of blueprint to wise things to do.
Well, it looks like their security is about as strong as the Villa backline. Let's go with the Villa news.
Injury news. The only thing probably positive from the defeat against Stevenage was the sight of Jacob Ramsey is back and at it after his hamstring. McGinn still AWOL at the moment. Cash and Augustinsson both went off, so potential injuries there. Augustinsson, it's like he's made out of butter. This is not the first time when he's finally started. He seems to have not been able to last 90 minutes. without picking up something.
Looks like a nasty one as well, that.
Yeah, I said something in something for the weekend against Wolves. There seems to be like he's missing like 25% in aggression in terms of how he plays. And he seems, when he gets into challenges, he seems to come out worse. So, I mean, I'm past caring now, I must admit. Cameron Archer has moved on to Middlesbrough. I think Cameron Archer, unfortunately, was a victim of Villa not getting as many League Cup games as they perhaps would have liked.
And we only, you know, we play a lone striker and we have most of the season.
Yeah, and the lone striker does not help as well. In terms of transfer rumours, there seems to be legs in the Alex Moreno, the left back from Real Betis. If it happens, it looks to be around the €12 million mark, but still not 100% on this. I mean, I initially thought when I heard they were in for some left back, I thought it was somebody who was younger. So it kind of made sense, like either he challenges Lucas Digne now or he's you're planning one step ahead for the future to obviously take over from Lucas Digne, but to have it be pretty much the same age. I mean, Augustinsson obviously is on loan, but it's a bit short term where you've got two 29-year-olds battling it out, because it's better, wiser to have the natural progression staged in there. I mean, obviously this would be Emery's intel if it is true. Meanwhile, the Aston Villa owners have put in 13 million of shares, which is basically kind of raising capital to do something. And the last time this happened, it normally links to something upcoming. I think it was Gerrard last time.
Yeah, the last time it was to pay off Gerrard and his staff. So yeah. You don't know it at the time, but in hindsight, it's like, oh, that's what that was for.
Yeah, exactly. Emi Martinez has reportedly spent a good $20,000 or so on a guard dog for his World Cup. It's not silverware, is it? It's goldware, really, isn't it? Everything he won there was gold.
Yeah.
What dog has he got?
He's got a Belgian Malinois guard dog. Apparently, it's from he got it from a company that has been used by Mikel Arteta, Hugo Lloris, and Tyson Fury, amongst others. But I didn't notice it in the pitch at Villa Park the other night whenever he paraded around with his gold medal.
I mean, if his dog's worth $20,000, you might as well cut your losses and try to steal the dog. Never mind that Adidas hand glove trophy. Surely that's not made out of proper gold anyway. Meanwhile, the Villa ladies have made a notable acquisition by signing Jordan Nobbs from Arsenal, the England international. She's 30 now, isn't she? She's not a prime mover in the Arsenal team anymore, is she?
Probably just getting to the twilight, shall we say.
Yeah.
So will obviously be an upgrade. It's one of the paths forward, isn't it, for a women's team trying to upgrade themselves is to take the top players that are probably fading out the first 11 of, you know, one of the top three teams. So we wish her luck. The Villa ladies are actually back in action now. After a winter break, they entertain Spurs at the weekend. They've also got a Conti Cup quarterfinal away at Arsenal to look forward to as well. Just finally, I was on an Aston Villa fan consultation group meeting to talk about the formalisation of basically the fan consultation group under a different guise, the Premier League. This is half from the, you know, because of the pressures of the fan-led review, the Premier League are now trying to suddenly get their act in order to try to avoid an independent advisor, just to avoid being told what to do. They are trying to preempt it by getting their house in order first. So one way is to kind of regulate what fan consultations groups mean. So all the Premier League clubs have to put out a plan, like an official plan, and this should happen in February, to what the fan consultation adheres to and how it's going to be run and, you know, when to expect reports, etc. Look out for more details of that. At the moment, you know, the discussions are very much in, you know, the formulation of it. So there's nothing finished to say at this point in time. Right. What's been happening in the press, Mr. Shaw? It's time for Media Muppets. Right. What have you got in the trough this week, Philippe Chaurio?
It's funny you should put it like a French tinge on it, because the first one is got a bit of a French tinge. It's a headline from HITC.com or hereinthecity.com, which is just, it's just shit. There's no point in that. Yeah. It's just, but 40,000 a week, Aston Villa player posts cryptic tweet ahead of rumoured exit.
Let me guess. It's not that little emoji tweet from Gilbert, is it?
Oh, you got it in one. I mean, cryptic. I mean, what's cryptic about it? It's like a football and it's like a time glass and it's like praying hands. He goes, I want to play football soon. Well, the only way Gilbert's going to play football soon is if he leaves. So that's what's going to happen. Because if he couldn't get a game against Stevenage, he's no chance of getting a game now.
Yeah, speaking of Muppets, my favourite thing is all this hoobla about Harry Maguire.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish.
Oh.
When people discuss this, do they actually think in terms of logic?
No.
The fact that we've got somebody we spent like nudging 30 million on coming back, hopefully, from his injury. It's going to be early Feb at a guess. Diego Carlos. Then you've got Mings, Konsa. You've also, you've got a loan in Bednarek covering the end of the season, and you've got Chambers as well. Did we rush out and drop money on a kind of a much maligned centre back who's actually 29 going on 30?
Not unless you're going to play him up front. Because, I mean, that's the only place you could stick him for, maybe to put some of those aimless crosses that are coming in. Maybe he is the man to get in the end of a Matty Cash cross. He's the only man that can do it with the size of his head. But anyway,
the missing link. But how desperate people are. I mean, and, you know, then they start fighting. How can you dismiss him? He's never put a foot wrong for England. And, you know, we don't have that many years, months, weeks, hours on this earth. Why waste it arguing over Harry Maguire, who's not coming?
Exactly.
Bizarre. But
despite everyone with a brain knowing that he shouldn't be coming to Aston Villa for the reasons that you've just given, I mean, the Daily Star, TalkSport and others, they ran the headlines, which were swiftly deleted later in the day, saying things like Aston Villa are on the verge of signing defender Harry Maguire from Manchester United. He's out of favour at Man United and Villa want the English international. More to follow shortly. Well, the more to follow shortly actually came from the Manchester Evening News and Samuel Luckhurst, their chief Man U correspondent, which he came out with. Sources close to Maguire and United said they have found the feverish speculation laughable after Maguire was supposedly spotted in Birmingham over the weekend. Maguire is believed to have gone to play a game of golf at the Belfry. So, I mean, that's all he has to do now. And this is what blows up out of it.
Can you imagine if Birmingham was a real mecca for shopping, like nationally known? Everybody would come for their Christmas shopping. So any Premier League footballer or any footballer that got caught in the bullring in the lead up to Christmas, it would be straight in the local and national press as a possible Villa target.
Maybe we'd finally get Benny McCarthy and Robbie Keane up front.
And Dale Stevens.
Steve Malbronco midfield. And Juninho might finally arrive.
I mean, the Harry Maguire thing made me laugh, as did all the people discussing it as a potential happening. But any media nuggets out there?
Opta analyst, the ones that do the Opta stats for the Premier League, had this media nugget after the Villa game. They said, Stevenage manager Steve Evans has now won as many competitive games as a manager as Unai Emery has at Villa Park. So that's one for anybody that's keeping score.
One out of four. He's had four competitive games, hasn't he, Emery? Must include his Arsenal games as well. You're not allowed to say anything bad about Emery if you're related to Villa. So this is why, you know, Opta stats are allowed to do such tomfoolery. Right, onto the 3 points. Our favourite FIFA president, Gianni Infantino. I feel like Stevenage today. That's how I feel. He has, as you may have seen, due to Pele's passing, he has asked every football federation in the world to name one stadium after the late Brazilian legend. This is just him posturing. I mean, he was taking selfies at bloody Pele's funeral with his casket in the background, which I mean, it says a lot. You know, if you're taking selfies at a bloody funeral, what kind of person you are. So far, not much of a move. I mean, even the Maracana Stadium in Rio dismissed the idea of naming it after Pele like in 2021. Cap Verde and Guinea-Bissau?
Yeah, they're the only ones that have said they'll do it so far.
I don't know what kind of stadiums they have there off the top of my head. But this is just somebody who's just, he's starting to light the limelight a little bit too much now. And I think he should just be ignored from here on in.
Well, he's just a grade A bell end, isn't he?
I thought that's where you were going with that. I'll second that. Number two, is it Bhupinder?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Bhupinder Singh Gill. I don't know how to pronounce Gill.
It'll be Gill.
Since Garlas Hill has arrived on Villa's shores, you don't know whether to pronounce Gill Hill. He's like changed something in my mind, that young Spanish player, that little Spanish player. He's become the first Sikh to act as an assistant referee in the Premier League after officiating in the Southampton versus Forest game. His whole family's it's like a family of referees, isn't it?
Yeah, his brother's still a ref, and his dad was quite a notable one, wasn't he?
Actually, this summer joined the EFL refs list, and their father, Jarnail Singh, took charge of 150 EFL games between 204 and 210, and he was the first ever official to wear a turban in senior English football. It's quite funny to have a family of referees.
You can imagine what they're like when they play games at Christmas, can't you? But they're so pernickety. Just enjoy it. You know, the competitive dad sketch in Harry Enfield.
Do you think they buy each other VAR systems for Christmas? All right, moving on. Point number three. Bit of a fandango in American football at the moment, with initially alleged attempted blackmail of the current USA coach during the World Cup. Former USA captain Claudio Reynos and his wife Danielle reportedly sent threatening messages to the US Soccer Federation, threatening to leak personal information about head coach Greg Berhalter ahead of the World Cup. The current US boss recently came out to say, publicly, he admit to kicking his wife during a drunken argument in 1991. He came out with that info in order to quash the blackmail plot, which was made throughout the tournament. Reyna was apparently upset that his son and rising star Gio Reyna was only to play a bit part in the tournament. This came to light during the tournament when the current US coach said he nearly sent the player home. And is this a quote?
Yeah, what he described him as. He said that the player simply wasn't trying during practice and was being something of a baby. So he didn't name
baby. You sound like that. What?
Trainspotting?
No, the guy off Austin Powers.
Oh, Fat Bastard.
Fat Bastard, yeah. Baby?
I want my baby back ribs.
He just said it about any player, didn't he? And yeah. Reyna confirmed on Instagram that it was him. This is still rolling on though in America, isn't it?
It is, because I mean, US men's national team is a bit like when you're a nation that hasn't had decades of success. Like any big players get remembered, and they still carry weight outside the game. So Reyna still carries weight, and for him and his upcoming son to be in the middle of this, I mean, it's going to rumble on.
Right, before we go on, I just want to give a big shout out to two new My Old Man Said members, Craig Jones, who joins us annually. If you join us annually, you get 10% off, which is just over a month free. Also, a big thank you to Jessica Drake as well. If you become a My Old Man Said member, you get ad-free versions of the show. So if you don't like ads, it's a better way of listening to the show and obviously supporting the show at the same time. You'll also get extra shows and membership of Match Club, our 24/7 Inner Circle meetup. If you are a current My Old Man Said member and have any issues connecting up to the members podcast channel or indeed Match Club, do drop me a message via Patreon. That's what it's there for. So if you want to join us in Match Club or get access to ad-free podcasts, etc., please do check out the members link on My Old Man Said or on the link tree in the bio of our social media as well. Thank you very much. Right then, let's get into this. Problem of talking about other stuff like news or whatever, it takes the sting out of where you wanted to go with this Stevenage game.
We're really vindictive.
I thought we did a very good job on something for the weekend in terms of assessing the threats, the possible lineup of Stevenage and what they would do, and it was pretty much to the letter.
Yeah,
well, we said they'd probably play a solid flat back five, and they did. frustrated Villa, and when they got the opportunity, they caused us problems on the break.
And that it would be a unique test for Emery with his Villa team so far in going about breaking a team down, because we've played, let's say, reasonably decent teams so far. Wolves was more, you know, they pressed us, and, you know, they pressed pretty high and they weren't just sitting back. So it was a unique challenge under Emery so far. In terms of his team selection, now when I saw that team, I thought, well, actually, we've got strength in depth now that we can actually play. There was 9 changes, I think there was.
I think it was 8, wasn't it?
You look at that 11 and you think, well, I mean, look at the front three. You've got Coutinho, Ings and Bailey. And you think about the amount of money spent on them. That should be more than enough to detonate Stevenage.
Yeah.
While it's wholesale change, while that 11 on paper, I mean, not only you've got those front three that, you know, their transfer fees in their careers cost more than the whole of Stevenage's history of buying players, but behind them, you've got 3 players that played in the World Cup, and then you've got 3 additional internationals on top of that. But while that 11 stacks up as good enough to do the job individually, you're also talking about 11 that hasn't played together as a team. And that Stevenage team, as we kept saying on that the preview podcast, was a well-oiled machine.
They've got a very, very small squad. They haven't been changing their team very much because they haven't been able to. And they had 6 subs you could name. It was 9, wasn't it, you could have.
And they spread the goals throughout the team. You know, their top league scorers were, I think they were both on 5, the 2 front guys. You know, there's goals throughout their back line, the centre-backs. And so when I saw that many changes, I mean, the more I talked about it on the preview podcast, I was thinking, he's going to play Chambers and Bednarek. He's going to think they're better. Cash is going to come in. You're going to play Augustinsson. And by the way, you'd probably play him anyway because Lucas Digne had a bit of a howler against the Wolves. Dendonka, I saw him coming in because I was thinking, well, at least with Bednarek and Dendonka, you've got more of a physical presence in case Stevenage, you know, do get a lot of free kicks. And I think after Bournemouth, I think in the Premier League, we give away the most set pieces. So they potentially would have been called into duty. And then your front three, I thought Coutinho would play and Ings would start. And then after that, you know, Sanson, I thought he was out the door, so I didn't know if he would necessarily play. Bailey, I think we said on the show, didn't we, that after that Wolves game, it's probably a good idea to give him a run out to hopefully get his confidence back.
Yeah, that went well.
That first 11, you thought, yeah, it looks interesting to actually, you know, as a spectator to watch. And to their credit, they took the lead. And Sanson, who had a decent enough game by all, you know,
yeah,
by whatever yardstick you want to measure him by, and took his goal very well.
Yeah, he did. The one thing I would just say about Sanson is he almost looks like more slight than he did whenever he joined Villa. He sort of he was quite easily sort of like knocked off the ball. He did get a lot of rough treatment from the Stevenage players, but if they say you by any means you judge him, if you judge him by the rest of the players that he's playing with today, you know, he was easily probably one of the best players in the pitch in a Villa shirt.
Yeah, when you say brushed off the ball easily, I mean, I must admit, when I saw both of the teams lining up, I was thinking, I'm glad this isn't a fight, like a fist fight, because they looked like, you know, they'd hardened battlers. I mean, especially the captain, Pier Gianni, he almost looked like a Viking, didn't he?
Yeah.
Weather-worn face, tats, and...
Yeah, well, listening on the preview show, whenever you said Pier Gianni, I was thinking this would be this cultured sort of Italian defender. And then when I actually seen him appear, I was like, oh, it's like something out of your race, like something out of Vikings or Norsemen. You said all he was missing was the action shield.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly the Stevenage Brazy, was it?
But Villa, I mean...
Where'd you fucking start, really?
The pattern of the game was pretty much Villa controlled it.
We had 80% of the ball for the first hour.
But they were just taking too many touches. It was predictable build-up. And, you know, was Stevenage frustrating them? I just thought, it wasn't necessarily that. It was just Villa a bit clueless, I thought, at times.
And unwilling to play at any kind of tempo. There was a few times where we had an out ball and Matty Cash was just stood in the right-back position, completely unwilling to get involved. Yeah. It's a lack of confidence. I do wonder, having seen how he went off in the end, I wonder if he was playing with a knock throughout.
Yeah.
Because he's got to get out there to stretch that back five, just to kind of create get out on space, you know, in between them.
Yep. Yeah, there was a number of times where, you know, Augustinsson was the fullback bombed forward, but then the ball would get switched, kind of not quickly, but an okay tempo, and you think, go on, Cash, get involved and overlap Bailey, and he didn't. And because they're playing a flat five at the back, if you don't overload them at any point, you make it really easy, and everything was in front of them. And Villa were in the end trying to pass it through the eye of a needle. Luckily, the one time they did it was brilliantly done, and Sanson scores what is actually a really good team goal. But you can't be having one serious chance in a game like that, They made fuck all game for all the possession. They did nothing with it. And actually, they went in at half time a goal up, but they did. They'd clipped the top of the crossbar and they'd had a goal ruled out. And that was from two or three sort of forays into the Villa half.
Yeah, they actually had the big chances where you actually thought, whoa, the only save I can remember their keeper making is, the one where he dived and caught it.
Yeah, it was off Louise, wasn't it? Which was a very sort of tame effort.
Token gesture. You didn't feel the threat, but when they had that shot that clipped the bar, I mean, the offside goal was. I mean, they had to think about that one. It was pretty tight.
They did. Yeah.
Yeah. What I noticed from that offside goal was, again, even a League Two team, and that's no disrespect them, even they know to attack down Villa's right, because that's where that shot that hit off the top of the bar came from Cash's position. But I'm starting to wonder now, I mean, is Cash the common denominator there, or is it in front of him? Is it Bailey in front of him? Is that why they attack down that side, and nearly every team playing against Villa attacks there?
I'd suggest that's the pairing. It's the combination of the two, if we're being kind to them.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Both.
In terms of what do we need in the transfer window, we've been quite, let's say, conservative in terms of what we would need, because you're looking at this team and the way it's performed, let's say in the Emery games only, and you're thinking, well, yeah, actually, the Spurs result, the Manchester United performance, the Brighton away performance. And then against Wolves, they kind of got themselves out of jail just because of, Emery's proactive changes. And you think, there's enough there. But if you identified it, what is our weakness? It has to be that right-hand side and, a wider player to play there. You've got that situation where I'm just talking about the Bailey's positioning, where you kind of start, on paper, it looks like a 4-4-2. So you're pressing with those two guys, and then obviously he, when you're defending, it kind of drops more into a 4-3-3, doesn't it? Or a
or even a 4-5-1 sometimes.
Yeah, Bailey is like flexible. He's playing a forward or on the right hand side, and that is the position you'd probably have to address or give him competition. But he's a frustrating player because he gives you that potential. You saw it at Old Trafford where he waltzed through pretty much their whole team. And he does that, probably once a game. But there's deficiencies to his game. But also, I think Cash as well. After a couple of games, you can, change your agenda on a player. But it's been a whole season now. His delivery is poor and we're being caught out on that right-hand side as well. It is an identifiable weakness.
Yeah, and it's not like complicated ticky-tacky passing that's catching us out. It's a very simple, there's the space, hit the space, and the Stevenage player just, you could see it coming, the Stevenage player, I didn't think he was offside until the replay showed later, but once it went to him, you seen the other Stevenage player running through the middle, and it was just a simple pass through the middle, and
Yeah. That was it. I mean, we're being undone by, you know, real ABC football. It's not like we're getting undone by masterful player or anything. It's pretty straight up stuff.
And most of the time of our own undoing, giving the ball away in stupid areas.
Well, speaking of which, let's talk about their two goals. I mean, at 1-0, there was something lethargic about us. I mean, I think on the something like 70th minute, I was about to tweet about Dendonka and say, I've never seen a player just walk around the pitch and play with like zero intensity. It was something really casual about it, as if he thought he was like a Harlem Globetrotter or something.
It was with all of them, though, to be honest.
But yeah, there didn't seem to be an intensity.
That was the word with all of them on the pitch, was casual. Like, we'll just get the job done. If the whole game felt like an inconvenience to them, we don't really want to be here.
It just looked like the last 10 minutes they were like playing to see the game out, but in a half-assed manner. It wasn't like we're playing United and we're one goal up and like, let's close this down by, you know, spoiling the game, shithousery, whatever. It was just like, it was just casual air about it when they really should be, you know, going for kill the game off, not try to see it out.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to talk intensity, there wasn't a booking in the match until Dendonka's red card. I mean, that's you're expecting at least a couple of bookings somewhere along the line. But no, that's the pace the game was played at.
And Dendonka, speaking of him, we need a new name for him, Big Daddy Donka. I mean, there's been a few I've seen on social media, but we'll leave it there.
It's just another example of... You're not getting what you paid for. You're not getting what the player that you identified and who you've seen perform like that before.
Well, hold on a minute. Let me, before you get their axe out, Phil Shaw, let's start from the pass out from Olsen, which this is there's a couple of things at play. What we're just talking about, this kind of laxed attempt at seeing the game out. And it's everything's so casual. People, you know, players are walking around, and then you're doing the whole play out the back routine again. And Olsen's choice of pass to Dendonka, who's actually got two Stevenage players in his vicinity. I don't think Dendonka was expecting it to come back to him. Wasn't expecting to receive it in that position, like centrally on the edge of the 18. And then he was so casual about it. You know, think about, I'm an international footballer, I can just spin my way out of this. It was just a disaster from start to finish. In terms of the actual foul, and people are saying, well, you know, he tugged his shirt outside the box. Was there two fouls, though? Yeah, was it like that initial tugging, and then he kind of brings him down, and that's what the penalty was awarded for?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was two fouls, the tug outside the box, but the Stevenage player stayed on his feet and carried on. So you could argue that advantage is played there, but then he just hacks him down in the box as well. He misses the ball completely with a wild tackle. So it's doubly, because I don't think you're going to get sent off for pulling the shirt like that. It's the second tackle.
But I mean, Belgium, they're not all cracked up to be, but you don't expect a Belgium international to be as lackadaisy as that and so casual with it. It was embarrassing. You know, you felt embarrassed for him. I was actually, at that point, I was thinking, well, they deserve to be going to Stevenage on a cold night, play the same team, see what they're made out of. But no. As Chris said at the start of the show, there's still time to lose this. And they did. And short corner, nobody anticipated that. Never mind anticipated, nobody reacted to it. That was embarrassing. And the guy couldn't believe his luck. Acres of Villa Park to run into. And then you had a goalkeeper who's going to give De Gea a run for the money as the worst near post keeper in the Premier League. Unbelievable. Yep.
Well, I mean, there's a still, you can pause the replay of the second goal, and the ball is almost with the Stevenage player, and Olsen is, you know, giving his arm signal that the ball's coming into the box. Nobody's looking in the direction where the ball is. I mean, it doesn't take a tactical genius to like stay alive to the short corner. I mean, you learn that in primary school.
And he could park a bus in the space between Olsen and his near post. I mean, these are fundamental goalkeeping errors that we've seen from Olsen a bit too frequently. I mean, you know, every keeper will drop a clanger here and there, but Olsen's hardly played any games and he seems to be doing them in every game. I think we're going to have to go with what Dan Rogers said about him in the Christmas specials.
Yeah.
Yeah, what, his absolute dog.
Yeah, what does it say about Swedish goalkeeping? Because he's just after winning the best goalkeeper, the best Swedish goalkeeper for the seventh year running.
He's the only one.
I mean,
I've been keeping my mouth. For those who clearly aren't in the room, I'm sat here trying to think what to say with my head in my hands still, trying to actually, like, I'm trying to compute how to, without just having a, like, an incoherent rant of expletives, because there's very few games with Villa, even if they lose, where no one comes out of that game with any credit. Someone normally comes out of it with a bit of credit. Maybe Sanson gets a little bit, so fair enough, you get one.
He got a swan song goal before his first and last for the Villa.
It felt like a bit of a swan song to me. It was like, well, we'll give you an hour because Marseille are in the stands and want to just make sure you can still run.
Yeah.
But I'm almost tripping over my words. It's just, I was staggered at how casual the whole thing was, how it's both...
Do you want me to help you, Chris, and give you one player that summed up the whole thing? Philippe Coutinho's shooting.
Horrendous.
That summed fucking up horrendous. Villa's attempts at beating Stevenage.
There's actually the two things, and I really want to like him at times because he's, you know, but the shooting was one thing. And I've taken the piss out of Man City in the past for this. And Villa have done this on steroids. How many passes can we have? Him and Louise were dicking around with it like they were playing in the garden. It was just like, I actually really like Louise. Of all the players in recent months, he's come out of the last few months and the Gerrard transition with a lot of credit in the bank for me. So it's kind of rare for him. But it was just like, let's all have an extra touch, shall we? Let's all just dick around with the ball.
Well, let me give you some stats to back up what you're saying. We've been doing this podcast how many years? And, you know, I always keep an eye on touches. You know, we had the touch count. So it's always something I've always had my eye on. I've never seen a Villa player with more touches in a game. And this is just based on what I've, you know, seen. Douglas Luiz, 139. Now, if you're getting near 100, that's a lot of touches. 139, that's enough touches for two games. Sometimes
and
three.
And most of them were unpressured.
Dendonka, 95. Now, that's a lot. So those two deep sitters seeing a hell of a lot of the ball, too much of the ball for my liking.
Well, I saw, you know, we'd had 80% of the ball the first hour. We'd done nothing with it other than the goalie picking the ball out of the net. What did he have to do for most of the game, even in the second half? You know, first, 10 minutes of the second half, I thought we started pretty well. And he thought, oh, this is, we'll kill the game here. We'll be done by an hour. Get the second goal, it would have killed the game.
Coutinho, 65 minutes on the pitch, 88 touches, which is a lot.
Everything went through him. But I don't want to see Coutinho picking the ball up on the halfway line.
The headline start is the problem, isn't it? Danny Ings, 16 touches in 71 minutes. Get him the ball.
Against Stevenage.
Yeah.
Didn't have a shot.
Yeah.
Well, they all did nothing.
We did say on the preview pod that this is not going to be a walk in the park and it will be a close game, but that's not... half of it was because we know Stevenage are a well-drilled team. And by the way, when they get promoted, they will also do well in the first division as well, as long as they keep the nucleus of their team, League One. But a lot of it was down to... this Villa team hasn't got the nous to beat Stevenage by 4 or 5 goals. There's no way that was going to happen just because of those two factors.
How often have we said, if you wildly open up against Villa, you're going to get battered, and teams have. Look at what Brentford did when they came, or the, you know, times against Man United. And at various times this season, we've really taken it to teams. Stevenage were always going to turn up and put a flat five, you know, and maybe let the front three try and win the game and cause us a few problems. By their time knowing, well, Villa will make a mistake, and they did. Bearing in mind, it's not the first time we've seen this playing out from the back. We saw it in the mid-season friendlies. We saw it in the Villarreal game. We saw it against Liverpool. We've seen it in all these games so far, really bar Spurs, who didn't press the ball a lot. We're not there yet. There is a process, but...
The process, you kind of forgive and go, right, you're going to make mistakes to get there. But not in this situation. Fair enough, you're playing Liverpool, Manchester City. You're under real proper top-level pressure. The odd pass might go astray and it might lead to a goal. Understand that. Not ideal, but there's a process to get where you want to be. Not in games like this. Not when you're ahead. 10 minutes to go. You're not dicking around at snail's pace in your own 18-yard box.
No.
Bearing in mind, I'd get them playing like that. If you're 2-0 up and you kind of go, oh, you've given away a stupid consolation. Well done. It's more nervy than it had to be. It happens. But when you're 1-0 up against a professional football team, you know there's a chance that one mistake can lead to a goal. And then when that mistake happens, that was what? It was about 3 minutes to go, if I'm right in saying. 3 or 4 minutes to go. Plus eventually the 6 of stoppage time. Now, if you're Villa there, you kind of go, if you've got Martinez, Mings or someone like that on the pitch, you made your mistake, you refocus, and a good side in that position goes, right, we switch it on now for the next few minutes, and you go up the other end, and you absolutely throw the kitchen sink at them, and you probably score. But Villa aren't at that point yet.
No.
Because we still don't know how to chase a game.
There was only one winner, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Oh, I sort of joke now, as I said, you know, we can still lose this, and it came as no surprise.
Yeah, but what sums up for me was the five changes that Villa brought on like five starters, But what summed up was Luca Dean, whenever Augustinsson got injured and Luca Dean had to go on, they used like a cricket term. He hadn't even got his pads on. He wasn't even dressed.
Yeah, he was nowhere near ready, was he?
I mean, that was the attitude of most probably that Villa bench. It's like, they're not going to need us today. So they weren't coming on switched on. None of them were coming onto that pitch like switched on and ready to play. Because at the time they came on, they came into like a tricky enough game. But...
That's on Emery as well. I'm sorry, you can give him blaze smoke up his ass for beating Manchester United and Spurs, but those players, as you quite rightly say, were nowhere near in the frame of mind. So he's just thinking they'd walk this as well.
Yeah, look at Dean's a professional. He should be at least dressed on the touchline. I mean, I don't think Mings was either. But I mean, they've been told by Emery, look, you're not going to be needed today. You're on the bench just. And it's got to the stage where, right, we need you. Do all five of these. Maybe he was only intending to make two or three changes. But whenever, especially the latter ones that needed to come on.
I mean, I thought Ramsey, you know, it was good to see Ramsey back. That's a bit of a plus moving forward. And he kind of got on the ball. And you actually thought that was the kind of, I was saying at halftime to Dan next to me that, he's the kind of player we probably need today, but we're trying to pass through the eye of a needle. You need someone who can actually take it to the line and engage them. You can't just pass round them constantly, especially at that tempo. You need someone who's going to force the issue a little bit. He got a couple of opportunities too, but our passing was just lax.
If this was Liverpool or Manchester United, you know you're going to get players running at their back four, tempting them, getting them in their 18-yard box, running at them, and you know they'd get a penalty at some point. I saw none of that.
I think Watkins did it once when he came on. Ramsey had a bit of a go. Bailey tried a couple of occasions. But we've looked the last week. I take the Spurs game out of it because you don't expect us to as much. We didn't engage them in that kind of way. We beat them in a different way. Fine. You didn't see it against Wolves. You didn't see it against Stevenage. Now you're going to play against Leeds on Friday night.
I think we're going to have problems against Leeds.
It's a very difficult game, that one. Because they're going to have energy. If we're not at it, you're going to get slapped around.
If you take the application and the mentality of what we've just seen against Stevenage.
And for long periods against Wolves.
Leeds keep getting draws, so they want a result to turn their tide. And this could be the one.
Yeah, you look at what Leeds did in their FA Cup game, for example. 2-0 down against Cardiff, managing to miss a penalty as well, but still 93rd minute equaliser as well. They're going to be coming in there on a high.
That was the worst case, the Stevenage game. It can happen. Magic of the cup and all that kind of nonsense. You draw and you go away and you have to get the job done, fine. It isn't like Villa should be worrying about fixture congestion. Don't switch off and concede the second. Because they've basically embarrassed themselves. They've made themselves look very, 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 that's three verys, foolish.
Yeah.
Because it isn't like, sometimes you'll get a game like that and you'll batter the opposition, you'll hit the bar three times, goals disallowed, all sorts, and you're going to go, oh no, they're going to get a moment and they'll score and it's just one of those things, it's not your day, or that is the magic of the cup, isn't it? You backs to the wall and nick a goal. Anyone who's watching that game, that was not backs to the wall. Villa might have had all the ball, they didn't do anything with it. Their goalie, normally the goalkeeper is man of the match, isn't it? The goalkeeper wasn't man of the match at all.
There's a two-way street here. We felt comfortable in control, but they also looked comfortable defending.
Yeah,
it became a bit of a nothing match, really, after an hour. Because they were like, I was thinking, are they going to have a go here? And they didn't really have to have a go because we gifted them the two goals. They never really... Because I think if they actually had have opened up and gone for it, we'd have probably pulled them apart. But because we gifted them it, they were just like... This is great.
Their boss, Steve Evans, post-match said, we knew we had to have a good shape about us, and they did have.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed in the game, and the game plan was to stay in the game until 75 minutes. I know my lads are fit, and I know my lads have hearts the size of Big Ben. It's a shame that Big Daddy Dunker doesn't have a heart that big as well. Emery post-match, while we're talking about this, yes, I'm really shocked. The mistake was a big mistake. The last 5 minutes, we didn't control our mind. It's a message. We have to learn and improve. We can't think we are better. We are Aston Villa. I'm upset. Sorry, with our supporters, each match gives us information. Well, decode that. I did like the, we can't think we are better. We are Aston Villa.
<He's> obviously, we know we're not better.
We know we're not better than any team. Decoding that, he's learning about his players. But these are things that we know as supporters in advance.
It's part of the Villa DNA, losing to low division teams.
Yeah, this is typical Villa. This is, as we said about Emery in the last show, before he gets to Emery ball, he's got to beat out
the
kind of Villa-isms.
Fundamentally, the loser's mentality.
Yeah, well, I'm going to bring back the ship of Theseus again that we've featured before in this. How many parts how many parts of the ship have to be completely replaced before it's a completely different Aston Villa ship? Or to use the only fools and horses example, Trigger's broom. I mean, Trigger had his broom for 15 years and he replaced 10 shafts and 6 broom heads on it. And it's still Aston Villa. I mean, how many more parts do we need?
Normally we finish the show with Emery's clipboard, but let's put that on ice until next week.
He wrapped the clipboard around Olsen's head, so the clipboard is no more. He's got to buy a new one then.
We'll re-adjourn with the clipboard next week. But I'm more interested in the ship of Theseus. How many players do we have to buy to rebuild Aston Villa? So it is Aston Villa.
It's hard
Aston
to judge
Villa
on today's team, because that is not our starting lineup, is it?
Somebody said Emery needs 4 transfer windows. But how many players do we need? But if you dial back, remember when we played Stoke? Was it in the League Cup recently? Where
yep.
we put out we lost, second string. And you look at that team and you think, that should be good enough. But none of the players gave a shit. And we got beat. The team on paper was good enough to win that game. And you think, oh, yeah, we've got depth in our squad. But it's not about how they are individually on paper. It was attitude. And they don't give a fuck about these cups, really. And I've stopped.
Until you get to the business end.
I've stopped giving a fuck now. I'm not going to be wasting any time on minor round cup games, because I don't trust the club anymore. Well, I haven't for a while. You know, going back from O'Neill to Gerard Houllier, some of the teams they've put out in cup games that were kind of important to fans, and we've been let down. It's like,
bear in mind, if you ask any supporter, ask every supporter what they wanted when Emery arrived, and I'd have said pretty much to a man, most would be saying, I would love a top 10 finish in a cup run. Everyone wanted a cup run, because we haven't had one in ages. And he came out before the game and went, I really want to win this. And everyone's, and
fool
and
me
all of a
once,
sudden,
shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Also, doesn't matter if you've won 4 Europa League, doesn't really matter to Villa, because we don't care about these cups. If you can't beat Stevenage,
you couldn't ask for a better cup draw at home to get Stoke away. Bearing in mind, you look at the way the draws transpired. Newcastle are out, Chelsea are out, City have got to play Arsenal next.
We'd be moaning about having to play Manchester United away all the time. Moaning about it, using it as our excuse for not winning the FA Cup for so long. This is the 8th time we've been beaten in the FA Cup consecutively. Our record in the FA Cup since we got battered by Arsenal in the 2015 final is atrocious. Only 1 win. That was when in the season we got relegated, when we went to Wickham and bloody pissed around and drew. And needed a replay.
The replay was one of the worst games of football I've ever been to.
Yeah. And, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And from this day forward, I'm not interested in cup games. I only wanted to see Villa win the FA Cup, then I could sign off. But it's the only one I haven't seen them win, but I don't care anymore.
It would appear they don't.
There's more chance for me to experience Villa FA Cup glory. There's more chance of me inventing a fucking time machine and going back to 1957 than this current crop and, you know, the next few years of Villa winning the FA Cup. Clip
I'd like
that.
To see you in a cloth cap, David.
Yeah, clip that and play it to me
as we walk
ever
down Wembley Way next year.
But I'll be clipping the bit where I said I'll invent the time machine, and probably more chance of me putting that up on Twitter. Go, look, I've invented it. Here we go. Here's my TikTok and my time machine.
You got AI to build you one.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But it's just disappointing, and I'm not falling for any ever again. But there was something about Emery in the press conference where he, even with his broken English, that he suggested that this game, you know, they weren't taking that seriously, but, you know, later on they would take the tournament seriously. They just expected to win, and there's no excuse for complacency at this level.
Well, it's like that thing that Purslow was talking about first day of the season at Bournemouth. No one saw that coming.
Yeah, of course. I don't get
it's
that.
Just like,
that's the thing. That's the
same mistakes.
Yeah, they're reactive. They're not proactive. I mean, they don't expect the worst to happen, but they should know by now it always happens.
And if it starts to happen, you flatten it before it does. That's the sign of a good team.
It's like Argentina had this in the World Cup. Before going into that World Cup, they had this real good team camaraderie. They were like fired up. You could tell it from what happened in the Copa America that they had the ability to do this, the way they took care of Italy in that Champions of the World game. What's it called? Finalismo or whatever it's called.
Finalissima.
But when you get in that mindset, you got to keep it going. And I think the game against the Saudis was a real sharpener for them. It's like, whoa, 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 hang on a minute. And they
hopefully that's that for
became
us.
Became intensely galvanized after that to finish off the job. So it can happen to the best of teams. But in our case, this is not the case because we're not there. We keep doing the same old shit every season in terms of, you know, the FA Cup record of 8 continuous defeats pays homage to that, even though that half of them against Manchester United. You got to beat United once at least, surely, if you're fired up for it. But nobody cares about this. But the problem is now I'm a bit cautious about the potential reaction against Leeds, because Leeds's trajectory at the moment is that they're desperate for this win. They're hungry for this win. But also, you know, because they're drawing games. It's not as if they're getting battered from pillar to post. They've got that intensity that's really going to test us. It might suit us if they're coming at us a bit more. But this is, you know, Villa let themselves down here. And you know, that can't be understated.
Yeah, the Wolves game can happen. You're going to have an off day. Stevenage shouldn't be.
No, that's right. So it's what this does to the rest of the season, because I still remember Fulham beating Gregory's Villa when they were flying top of the league. And that was the beginning of the death spiral for Gregory's Villa that season.
Ooh.
Well, that, because they got key injuries that year, if you remember.
But in summation, I mean, you didn't really get on the Coutinho bone that I threw you. Do you think he's a spent force? Because I thought this was basically target practice for him, and he just failed.
I think having seen a little, with not a big body of work, but we've seen enough of a body of work now since he's arrived for Emery to suggest that Villa at their best under him aren't going to include Coutinho as a starting player. He's an option off the bench. He can be tidy. I think when you want to keep the ball, pop it around, get him in advanced areas, great. Putting him out wide, pointless. He's got no pace. He slows the game down. That's the big thing. He slows the game down. I think Jamie Carragher put it that he's like a five-a-side player. He wants to play in tight little squares. That's great, but football's played on a full pitch. I don't see, when you've got like Ramsey back fully fit, McGinn full flow, whoever else you bring in.
Harry Maguire.
Exactly, straight down the middle. I don't see his role anymore. Even like fully fit Coutinho, I don't see his role.
Yeah, well, I'll just reiterate. I could never believe why a certain club would spend so much money on him before Villa bought him, I'm saying.
It's because they had more money than sense.
Liverpool, fantastic business. Incredible. They built a team that would go on to win the Champions League, really, didn't they?
And the league, basically.
And the league. Yep. That was Coutinho's main contribution in all of this. I think all his trophies that he won with Barker and Bayern Munich, I think they would have won them anyway.
Mm-hmm. But he's hoping for a reaction. Geez, they've got to have one now. We've come through another 3 home game week and we've fluffed our lines twice so far. Third time lucky, please.
I don't mind if we're in March going still unbeaten in 2023 in the league. I don't mind that. Mm. But I'm a bit concerned now, just because a squad that's mentally strong takes care of business. It's not as if they didn't turn up. This game was in control. They were 1-0 up and literally a few minutes left. And we've been lauding their improved shithousery and also the effectiveness of Emery in terms of his substitutes, in terms of closing a game down. And he arguably brought on 5 first-teamers here and it all went to shit when they were all on the pitch.
Pretty quickly, might I add.
So this is a loss for Emery as well. I mean, I know you're not allowed to talk against him in these early stages, but he'll be kicking himself here. He'll learn about some of his players. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. It's a tough one to take this. It's more embarrassing for supporters because they have to deal with their work colleagues taking the piss out of them and family members, etc. These players, the money's in the bank, doesn't really matter. Hopefully we get a reaction against Leeds and we can get out of January unbeaten in the league would be a big plus.
Yep.
And get in the top half of the league. So with our fingers crossed, it's time to say it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.